Good afternoon.
Hi.
Oh, he can do better than that. Good afternoon. My name is Joshua Gilliland. I'm one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. Thank you for joining us today. Go ahead, clap. So, we have a wonderful mock trial for you that is a petition to appoint the Mandalorian the guardian of the child. So we have a courtroom artist here, Jimmy Purcell, who will be sketching throughout the entire proceedings. The sketches will be available for auction. So benefiting
San Diego Comic Fest. You can join us in the Ray Cafe at 5:30 for cheap deals on some very expensive, very rare items that have been contributed by some of our special guests, local comic stores, local bookstores, and local publishers. So please do join us at 5:30 at the benefit auction.
Today.
And all the proceeds go toward putting on this wonderful event called San Diego Comic Fest because we try to do a bigger, better show, and we couldn't do it without all of you. Thank you so much for being here.
I want to thank all the law students who will introduce themselves to the court for the Mandalorian for being here, and Judge Emily
Spears,
nearly said Smalls, but that's catch up. And we'll have a rip-roaring good time. So with that, court's in session.
All right, good morning. Calling case number 052020GLR1. I'd like appearances, please.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Denise Barnes, representative for the petitioner, the Mandalorian, and the child, seated to my left.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Claudia Salinas, also representing the Mandalorian.
All right, on behalf of the respondent.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Brian Mallard, on behalf of Department of Children's Services.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Leslie Salazar, representing the Department of Children's Services.
All right, as a preliminary matter, I noticed from reading the declarations and the responsive declarations that the child hasn't been assigned a name. For purposes of today and for simplicity for all sides, the court had pondered Nigel as a name. However, the court is going to go with Lucas as a name for the child. Again, this is for simplicity for all parties involved, and also I don't like the child as a name. Additionally, I will apologize to all. I have a bit of a cold, and I do have some cough drops here. I'm not chewing on gum. No, I do not have the coronavirus. Are there any motions before we get started?
Yes, Your Honor. We do have two motions that we would like to bring before the court. We would just like to make it a point of order that the Mandalorian does exercise part of his religion by wearing his helmet, so pursuant to the First Amendment under the Free Exercise Clause. We ask that he's allowed to keep his helmet on throughout the duration of this trial.
All right, the court is aware that there is case law that limits how much disguising can do of your appearance. I'll hear from the Department of Children and Family Services.
Department has no objections.
All right, the court will allow the Mandalorian to continue to wear his helmet. In addition, the court notices that there is a child present in court here today that is normally not how the court proceeds, but I understand there are special circumstances in this case.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, the court will allow Lucas to remain here in the courtroom.
And finally, Your Honor, just for purposes of this mock trial, would Your Honor prefer that we direct our arguments directly to Your Honor or to the constructive members of our jury?
I prefer if you directed them to the constructive members of our jury.
Yes, Your Honor. With that, we are ready to proceed.
All right, any motions on behalf of DCFS?
None, Your Honor.
All right, we're ready to proceed. I have read and considered the declarations by both sides. I'd like to hear from the petitioners first.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. My name is Claudia Salinas, and along with co-counsel Denise Barnes, represents the Mandalorian in this case. Now, while we do represent the Mandalorian, I think it is in the best interest of all of us to recognize that we are here to ensure the safety of Lucas, the child. Now, we are not here to find the perfect parent. We are not here to find the perfect sanctuary. We are here to determine whether the Mandalorian, Mando, is the best guardian for Lucas. Lucas.
Mando.
Your Honor, I am confident that you will find that that is the way. Now, just to back up a little bit, we have some history with Lucas. Now, he's cute, he's friendly, he's an innocent child. But even to this day, there are plenty out who have bounties for his death. And the Mandalorian knew that the moment he saw him. He made sure to take Lucas out of the pod and into safety. The Mandalorian battled after battle, putting his life to protect Lucas. The Mandalorian had several opportunities to leave Lucas in the care of farmers, where he was surrounded with children who loved him, where he had frogs to eat. The Mandalorian had the option to leave him with a doctor who had specialties to do who knows what. And the Mandalorian had the option to leave him with a client who had a big bill over his head. But something just didn't sit right with the Mandalorian. Something in his conscience told him that wasn't right. And he was conflicted. Now that conflict comes from the deep history that the Mandalorian has in protecting foundlings. The Mandalorian was a foundling himself, you will learn. And he knows that foundlings are the future. And you must do everything you can to protect them. So like any Mandalorian stuck with these type of conflicts, he went to the armorer. The armorer, with guidance, told him what was the most important line yet. A foundling is in your care. By creed, you must protect him until he is of age, or until he is reunited with his biological family. That is the way. Thank you, Your Honor. I have spoken.
Does DCFS wish to deliver an opening statement?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, we come before the court today to make a very important decision, one that can set the foundation for future cases like this. We have before us the decision to make, the best decision that we have to make for Lucas. Lucas is an extraordinary child. He possesses powers that we have not seen in many, many years. The only person at the very least that we can relate to this power is Luke Skywalker. But we have to look to history to see what would be the best interests of Lucas. We need to make sure that we keep his focus as our focus. We have to keep in mind it's not so much what would be ideal, but what would be the best fit. What would be Lucas's best interest. We have to be able to find him a suitable environment for his growth. We have seen in history what it's like if he does have a suitable environment. As I mentioned, Luke Skywalker is a perfect example. He was able to be raised in a loving environment and then taught the way of the Force to become a great Jedi Master. But good intentions do come with flaws, and we have seen that good intentions don't always reach the best result. And we have seen that in the history of Anakin Skywalker. Anakin Skywalker was presented before the Jedi Council, and they said he was dangerous. However, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan Kenobi, with their best intentions at heart, decided to still train him. Their good intentions proceeded throughout, and yet it resulted with Darth Vader being a critical key figure in the rule of the Empire. We have to look at past case law. Case law is what will guide our decision here. We have to look at what's already been presented in the past in order to make a best decision for the future of Lucas. We have case law in Henry Zigi, which provides the key guidance that the court has to look at where we can find stability and continuity for the child. We've seen case law in Henry L.M., that the purpose of using the best interest of the child standard is to be able to maximize the child's potential of reaching maturity as well as stability. I plead the court that we have to look and use this best interest of the child standard because we have a very critical decision to make here. We've seen what happens when, despite our good intentions, things can go wrong. We cannot make that same decision again. We cannot make that same mistake again. For that reason, we have to focus on the best interest and do what is right for Lucas. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, is the petitioner prepared to call their first witness?
Yes, Your Honor, we are.
All right, you may proceed.
Can you please state your name and spell your last for the record?
Hold on a moment. We need to have the clerk swear the witness in.
Thank you.
Ma'am?
Yes. Please raise your right, Lucas. And now repeat after me. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to help you God?
I do. This is the way.
Please state and spell your name for the record.
My name is Din Djarin, D-I-N-D-J-A-R-I-N.
All right, thank you. You may proceed.
Now, do you go by any other names?
Most people I come across call me the Mandalorian, or yes, Mando for short.
Now, why do they call you that?
They call me that because a Mandalorian is not a race, it's a creed, and it's recognized throughout the galaxy. Everyone knows a Mando when they see one.
Now, have you always been a Mandalorian?
No, I'm what's called a foundling.
What is a foundling?
A foundling is someone who's not born to the Mandalorian creed, but they're brought into it at a very young age.
So can you tell us how you were brought into it at such a young age?
Unfortunately, when I was 8 years old, my parents were murdered in front of me by a battle droid, and I was orphaned.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, our city was under attack by the Empire. Like I said, battle droids everywhere. My parents tried to find a place to keep us safe, but there just wasn't a place. They finally tucked me by myself into an underground bunker and stood outside to stand guard. Shortly after that, they were murdered by the battle droid.
So what happened after that?
After murdering my parents, the battle droid opened the hatch to the bunker where I was hiding and raised its rifle and pointed it at me to kill me. Thankfully, at the last possible second, a Mandalorian saved my life from the battle droid and took me to safety. If it wasn't for him, I would surely be dead.
I'm going to redirect your attention to the child, or Lucas. How did you meet Lucas?
First of all, he goes by Favreau when he's on my ship. But how did I meet him? Well, I'm a bounty hunter, and I was hired by a man I only know as the client to bring in a bounty, but it was a very unusual request.
Well, what do you mean by unusual?
Well, typically when I'm hired to bring in a bounty, I know exactly who I'm after, exactly what they look like, and where they are. In this case, I had very little information. I had very little information on where it was. I had a tracking beacon, and I didn't know what he looked like. I just knew that he was 50 years old.
So what did you do with this tracking system that you have?
Well, I went to a faraway system using the tracking device. I was able to locate a compound where he was being held, and it seemed to be held by what looked like mercenaries.
What did you do?
I climbed to a high ridge and observed the compound to try to formulate a plan to break in and get my bounty. But while I was observing the compound, I observed a bounty droid marching straight into the compound by itself.
Did you talk to this bounty droid?
Well, at the time I was up on a ridge, but I quickly was able to figure out that he was just walking into the compound and starting a firefight, going after whatever bounty it was that he was after. I then went down to the compound and fought alongside him, and we quickly discovered that we were both there for the same bounty. So we decided to team up and defeat, stop all of the mercenaries.
Were you able to stop all of the mercenaries?
We were, and then we found the location where our bounty was. We cut our way through a blast door and found that our tracking device led us to a very small pod in the corner of the room. It was a little bit unusual, to say the least.
Did you approach the pod at all?
I did. The pod was closed, and when I pushed the button to open it, I found Favreau inside of the pod.
And what did you do next?
Well, I was hired by this client to bring the bounty in, either dead or alive. And as soon as I saw him, I knew there was no way that I was going to kill him. He's tiny, he's adorable, he seemed defenseless at the time. There was no reason to kill him, and he was just too cute, honestly.
So what did you do?
Well, I was going to take him back alive, but then IG-11 raised his blaster and claimed that he was instructed to only bring his bounty in dead. He was going to murder the child right in front of me.
And did you stop him?
I stopped IG-11 and took the child with me. Okay. And rescued him from the compound.
Where did you go?
Well, I tried to return to my ship only to find that my ship had been ravaged by Jawas.
Can you tell us what Jawas are?
Sounds like they already know, but Jawas are little rat bastards that fight anything they can get their grubby little dirty paws on so that they can sell it for money.
So what did you do when you saw these Jawas?
Well, after some brief target practice, I decided that my best option was negotiation. So I went and negotiated with the Jawas to try to get the parts for my ship back. After speaking fluent Wookiee, apparently, I was able to negotiate a trade with the Jawas.
And what was this deal that you guys made?
The Jawas, for some reason, wanted this egg. I don't know why, but they told me if I was able to retrieve an egg for them, that they would trade me all the parts to my ship back.
Did you go try to find this egg?
I did. We took a brief ride in their sand crawler to a cave where they said the egg was located. I took the child with me to protect him from the slimy rat bastard Jawas, and approached the cave. It was then that I determined that the cave was inhabited by a mudhorn, and the egg belonged to the mudhorn.
What is a mudhorn?
A mudhorn is a really big monster with a giant horn that likes to crawl around in the mud, strangely enough.
So, were you able to get the egg?
I was, however, something remarkable happened.
What happened?
Well, I tried to take the egg. Like I said, the mudhorn was not having it, so it attacked me. I tried to fight it off, but it was just too big and strong. It was able to knock my blaster and my rifle out of my hands, and I was left to defend myself with nothing but a knife. I really didn't have any chance, and I literally thought that was it for us.
What happened next?
The mudhorn reared back and charged at me, but then it stopped. It was weird. I didn't know what was happening. Why would it stop? It was going to kill me. And then the strangest thing happened. You won't believe this, but it levitated off the ground.
Do you know how that levitation happened?
Well, I didn't at first. I thought maybe it's doing it itself, but why would it do that? It was just charging at me. It was then that I turned and saw Favreau. I'm going to keep using that name. In his pod, his eyes closed and his hand outstretched, and I still don't know how he was doing it, but this little guy was levitating that giant beast off the ground, and he saved my life, and we were able to escape with the egg.
So what happened after he saved your life?
We traded the egg for the parts, we fixed my ship, and we headed back to Navarro with the child.
What happened when you got to Navarro?
Well, like I would typically do with a bounty, I turned him over to the man who hired me, unfortunately.
And what happened?
I immediately had a strong feeling of remorse. I knew I had done something wrong. And I feel like Favreau sensed it too.
Why did you get that sense?
Well, for me, it was a gut feeling, but as they took him away in his pod, he turned at me, and with these little tiny puppy dog eyes, he squealed in a way that I hadn't heard out of him before. It seemed like fear to me.
What did you do next?
Well, again, like I normally would, in this case, I returned to my ship after they took him away, but when I got to my ship, something there reminded me of him and the time we had spent together, and I knew what I had to do.
I know this is tough for you. Thank you for, you know, being so open with us. What did you do next?
Well, I left my ship and returned to the city, found the building where the doctor and the client were keeping him, and was able to listen in on a conversation they were having. And the client told the doctor something along the lines of, "I need you to extract the material from the child." I don't know what that means, but it obviously isn't good, and it sounds painful, possibly even lethal.
So what did you do?
I broke into the compound. I located the child who was in the lab with the doctor. He was flat on his back, and he was unconscious. And the doctor had him hooked up to some kind of machine. I don't know what he was doing, but again, it obviously wasn't good, and I needed to get him out of there.
Were you able to get him out of there?
I was. We escaped the compound and headed back to the ship. However, we were cut off by a number of other mercenaries and bounty hunters who had heard that I was taking my bounty back, and they didn't agree with that decision, so they tried to stop.
What did you do in response?
I tried to talk my way out of it, but they weren't having it, so a firefight ensued. I jumped onto a cart with the child, and I shielded him with my body. I took out some of the bounty hunters, but we were outnumbered 16-1. There's no way we were going to get out of there alive. And right when I thought all was lost, other Mandalorians showed up and saved us and allowed us to escape.
So what happened next?
We left Navarro in search of a peaceful place, somewhere we could lay low for a while. We found just the right place and found a small, peaceful village on a faraway system. We landed there and made friends with the people in the village.
Did you stay there long?
We quickly became friends with the villagers, especially the child. There were a number of children in the village. They really loved him. They loved watching him eat frogs. It seemed like the perfect place to leave him forever. It seemed like he would be happy there and he would be safe. It was a very quiet, peaceful village. I also met a young woman named Cara Dune. She's right there. And we quickly became friends over our distaste for the Empire.
One moment, please. Is there a witness present in court here today?
Yes, Your Honor. There's a few witnesses.
Is there any motion on behalf of the respondent?
No motion, Your Honor.
All right. The court will allow the witnesses to remain. I apologize for interrupting you.
It's okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And so, you mentioned earlier at first, so what changed about the potential safety of Lucas?
Well, we met Cara Dune, became friends with the villagers. I had pretty much decided that I would leave the child there because he seemed safe there and loved and he would be well taken care of. However, a couple of days after we were there, another bounty hunter showed up and unfortunately tried to murder him right in front of us. And thankfully, Cara was able to stop him and protect the child. And it became clear to us at that point, and we both agreed, that not only were we endangering the safety of these poor villagers, but we agreed that no matter where we took him, no matter how peaceful the location was, there was still a bounty out for him, and bounty hunters would continue to track him and try to murder him.
So what did you do with that information?
Well, we decided to leave there immediately to keep those people safe, and right after we left, I received a transmission from Greef Cargan back on Navarro, and he told me that he had formulated a plan to kind of resolve all of this, so we headed back to Navarro.
What did you do when you got back to Navarro?
Well, to briefly summarize, we met up, Cara and I met up with Greef Cargan. We went back to the city. We sat down with the client to try to negotiate with him. And right when we were having a conversation with him, Moff Gideon shows up with a bunch of stormtroopers and attacks the building we're in, kills the client, and traps us inside.
What happened next?
Well, we were trapped, and a stormtrooper with a flamethrower came through the door and was about to kill us. And once again, the child was able to basically save all of our lives. Somehow, again, I don't know how he does it, but he saved us again. We were able to escape, and then we met with the armorer.
Who is the armorer?
She's one of us. She's a Mandalorian. She is highly skilled at crafting armor for us. But she's a lot more than that. She is the best of us. She's the smartest of us. And we all look up to her for wisdom and advice.
And what did you learn from her that day?
Well, I had a conversation with her about how my bounty had saved my life, which is obviously highly unusual. And he had done it multiple times, and there appeared to be a bond between us. She declared that we were now a clan of two, and that it was now my sworn duty as a Mandalorian to protect this child and keep him safe until either he is of age or he's returned to his kind.
I have one final question for you, Mandalorian. Do you feel that your job would conflict with the best interests of the child?
Look, what I do is dangerous. There's no doubt about it. But like I said earlier about the peaceful village, right now it doesn't matter where he goes or who he's with. He's being hunted. And in my opinion, his safest place in the galaxy is with me.
Thank you, Your Honor. No further questions at this time.
All right, Cross.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, very briefly, I would like to thank you for the work that you've done to protect the child up to this point. I think it's obvious that you care for the child. With that in mind, I'd like to ask you a few questions about what we're going to do going forward, okay?
Certainly.
Mr. Jaren, you are a bounty hunter, correct?
Yes.
And as a bounty hunter, your job is to hunt down individuals who have committed bail violations, correct?
Yes.
And these people that you are pursuing as part of your job are often dangerous individuals, correct?
Not always, but sometimes, yes.
How often would you say they are dangerous individuals?
30%.
30%? Dangerous to you or dangerous to most people?
Well, they're certainly dangerous to me because I'm trying to bring them in for what they've done. Dangerous to most people? Sometimes, yes. Sometimes they're just hiding from being brought in.
Okay. Sir, have you ever been shot at on jobs?
Absolutely.
You have been ambushed on jobs, correct?
Yes.
And you have been wounded on jobs?
Yes.
Can you please describe your most serious injury while working as a bounty hunter?
My most serious injury while working as a bounty hunter was actually in the battle I just described, where Moff Gideon trapped us right before I met with the Armorer. I was very heavily damaged, and I can't obviously say exactly what was wrong with me, but I was pretty sure I was going to die. If it wasn't for IG-11 who saved me, I probably would have died.
So, in working as a bounty hunter, it's fair to say that you have nearly lost your life?
Yes.
Have you been injured multiple times?
Certainly. Well,
more than twice?
Yes.
In the year 9 ABY, you accepted a bounty working for a man known only to you as the client, correct?
Yes.
Did you know anything about this man at the time you accepted the bounty?
The client? You're asking about the client.
The client,
right?
Yes, yeah. Sorry.
No, I was directed to him by a grief card, and I did not know much of anything about this man.
Did he have anyone with him when you met with him?
He had some stormtroopers with him, yeah, which made me a little uneasy.
Okay,
I don't like stormtroopers.
So, and this ended up becoming the job where you captured the child on Arvala 7 on behalf of the client, correct?
I would use the word rescue, but yes.
Rescue. At the time, did you consider it a rescue?
When I was going in there, no. But the second that IG-11 pointed his blaster at his head and was going to murder him, yes.
And after you rescued the child from IG-11, you took him back to Navarro?
Yes.
And on that job, were you were responsible for killing over 24 mercenaries, correct?
Well, I didn't go around and take anybody's pulse, but they were down. As long as they're not shooting back at me, that's all I care about.
And ultimately, despite your best intentions with this child, Moff Gideon's forces were successful in briefly capturing the child, correct?
They were, yes. The one time I let him out of my sight, lesson learned.
Okay. And do you anticipate working in some other less dangerous profession in the future?
Possibly.
What do you imagine is another potential profession for you?
Oh, I want to make a joke about Matt Dunford right now. I want to be responsible for promoting a small comic convention in San Diego. Oh, I mean, that sounds great, to be honest. When I was on the Peaceful Planet with the villagers, there was a woman there, and we definitely, obviously, had feelings for one another. And for a moment, I thought maybe I could lead a peaceful life like that. I think maybe one day I'd like to do that, but obviously I can't right now.
Was this was on Sorgan? You spoke to a widow?
Yes, that's correct.
And you were, is it fair to say then that you were approached with the possibility of leaving your life as a bounty hunter behind and living a peaceful existence?
Yes.
Okay. To the best of your understanding, did the child seem happy on Sorgan?
Until the bounty hunter tried to murder him, he was very happy, yes.
And you declined the opportunity to stay on Sorgan with Lucas, correct?
Yes, I mean, we decided not to stay there, like I said, because the bounty hunter showed up and it became evident that he was being tracked. So not only was he not safe there or really anywhere else, the villagers weren't safe as long as we were there with them.
Okay. Do you recall having discussed the possibility of leaving this life behind with Cara Dune at any point on Sorgan?
To be honest, I don't remember.
Okay.
Possibly.
Okay. We have a holo recording of that conversation. If it's acceptable to the court, I could play it.
All right, petitioner, have you seen this evidence?
Not yet, Your Honor.
All right, is it acceptable that we would play it now and you can make any objections after it's played?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, when you're ready.
Now, I realize this was before the bounty hunter attacked on Sorgan,
sure.
But you said to Cara Dune, traveling with me, that's no life for a kid. I did my job, he's safe. Better chance at a life. Is that correct?
That sounds right, now that you put it that way, yeah.
All right. And on Arvala 7, the child used some kind of sorcery, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you very familiar with this kind of sorcery?
I've never seen it before in my life. Like I said, I have no idea how he does it.
Okay. During the time you've had the child and had him in your care, the Empire has tried to take him from you, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
They very much want him for whatever material they're trying to extract from him.
Okay. Do you know whether the material they're trying to extract from him has anything to do with his abilities?
It would seem reasonable, yes.
Okay. I'd like to turn now to your living situation, Mr. Jaren. You live aboard the Razor Crest, correct?
That's correct.
You keep weapons aboard?
I do. In the cabin, yes.
Approximately how many weapons do you keep aboard the Razor Crest?
Approximately how many? 27.
27? Has Lucas ever gotten into anything or touched anything he shouldn't have on the Razor Crest?
He has, yes. Don't deny it.
Is there a lock on your armory that you keep on board the Razor Crest?
There is.
Okay.
There's a keypad that you have to touch that's up too high for him to reach. Okay.
And you're confident that he couldn't get into it?
Well, with his powers, I can't be sure of anything he can and can't do. But he hasn't to this point.
And you often find yourself traveling to other planets, correct?
Every day.
everything. There's a lot of traveling involved, I imagine.
The Razor Crest does not have a frequent flyer program, I'm afraid.
Some of the planets you travel to are dangerous, correct?
It's Star Wars, man. Every planet is dangerous.
Every.
Have you seen the movie?
So while on Sorgan, circling back, you were involved in a skirmish near the village, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in the skirmish on Sorgan, you were involved in combat with an Imperial AT-ST walker, correct?
That is correct.
You would consider an AT-ST Imperial walker to be dangerous, correct?
I mean, that's what it's built for, yeah.
Sure. Where was Lucas while you were fighting on Sorgan?
He was in the village with some of the villagers, where we felt he was more safe.
Would the village, would you consider the village to have been part of the combat zone?
I mean, the outskirts of the village, probably. I mean, the AT-ST never got into the village and damaged any of the homes or anything that I remember.
Thank goodness for that.
Council, if you could keep the commentary to yourself, thank you.
Mr. Jaren, would you agree that the most important thing for us to determine today is what is best for the child going forward?
100%.
No further questions then.
All right, any redirects?
Brief, Your Honor. Opposing counsel spent a lot of time questioning your time at the village. I want to redirect you to that time.
Okay.
Why did you feel it was necessary to take the child away from the village?
To take him away from the village and leave the planet?
Yes.
Well, because the bounty hunter showed up, and like I said earlier, no matter, I mean, that place was a very peaceful village. No weapons, very few people. They were farmers. And yet, just a couple days after we got there, a bounty hunter showed up and tried to murder him. So, like I said, I don't think there's anywhere where he's safe as long as the bounty is out on him.
And do you believe that the child is best off in your care?
I do. Mainly because I know how to protect him. Anywhere he goes, no matter who he's with, at least for now, they're going to hunt him down. And because I care about him more than anyone, I feel like I'm the one best fit to protect him.
Thank you, Your Honor. No further questions.
All right. Any further witnesses on behalf of the petitioner?
At this time, no.
All right. On behalf of the respondent?
Yes, we have one with us.
All right.
I'd like to bring in Garm Dime for it, please.
All right. All right, sir, if you could please remain standing, face the clerk to be sworn in.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please state and spell your name for the record.
Garm Dime, G-A-R-M. D-I-M-E.
All right, when you're ready.
Mr. Dime, please say your profession.
I am an officer in the New Republic, and I have also been assigned to the Department of Child Services.
What training did you receive before you were assigned to the Department of Child Services?
Following the Battle of Endor and the final battles cleaning up the Galactic Civil War, many of us in the former Alliance and the New Republic were given secondary training as we sort of transitioned to a peaceful period. I underwent about 6 months of training on Coruscant to help find new homes for children that had been displaced by the war.
And what specifically is your role within department? I know you reference it a little bit, but what exactly would be your role within department?
The department has been flooded with applications pertaining to the well-being of people who have been displaced during the war. Oftentimes these come in the forms of petitions for guardianship. We also have to resolve or at least weigh in on custody disputes. But I would say that the majority of my time is spent reviewing and opining or coming to some recommendation on petitions for guardianship.
And when you do receive these applications for guardianship, generally walk us through the process of how you come from when you receive the application to when you make your final decision.
So we take a look at what we receive. Typically we receive some paperwork for the person who is petitioning to try to be the guardian of the child in question. We also ideally would like to meet with that petitioner and interview them. We would also like to conduct a visit of the home if possible. We would also like to check references. We have to be very careful. We're very mindful about trying to do what is best for the child in every case. Now, that all comes with a caveat, unfortunately, and that is that following the Galactic Civil War, our resources in the New Republic are very strained. So we are not typically able to do all of those steps. We often find ourselves just trying to do the best that we can, given the circumstances. However, I would add to that that this case is considered the highest priority by the New Republic, so we have tried to do everything we can to make the best decision that we are able to make.
And are you, do you usually make those decisions based off of what qualifications?
So I do make the decision. I make a recommendation when there is a challenge or a hearing of this sort. Of course, the decision would ultimately be made by the judge or if there is an advisory jury. But we weigh in on that, and typically, you know, our conclusion is given some deference, depending on, you know, depending on the court.
I want to redirect to kind of what you go about with the application process. What are key things that you consider when you are evaluating guardianship placement?
So one of the most important things for us, keeping in mind that, of course, that the overarching concern is the best interest of the child, we want to see that the child will be in a safe environment, in a stable home, surrounded by people who will love and care for the child. We would also like to, of course, see a situation where the child will be able to learn and grow and reach the child's full potential. Now, we have to keep in mind that in the galaxy, particularly after the oppression of the Empire, we have a lot of races, a lot of species that really suffered horribly at the hands of the Empire, and we want to really try our best to respect the differences between all of the different species. We want to keep in mind that what's, you know, what's good for one species, you know, the Rodians, for example, would not be good for the Ewoks, perhaps. So we need to be really sensitive to the cultural needs of that particular child.
And as you're going through an assessment, what are some things that would make you question whether that placement is fit for a child?
So if you take a look at some of the factors that I've already listed, you know, safe home, stable environment, loving family, loving people, and a place for the child to grow, you know, some sort of a school perhaps, or in other situations if there are elders or other people that can help sort of train the child and help bring the child to the age of majority, where whatever that may be given the species. Those are the things we're looking for. So if any of those were absent or if we saw sort of the reverse of that, that would be a real red flag for us, a real concern. You know, for example, if the child were forced to move all the time, if the child were placed in danger, if the parent were placed in danger, or if the child were placed in danger, that's a real concern. You know, we're coming off years of galactic war. The last thing a child needs is to be running again from blaster fire or from conflicts. We're really trying to undo the damage that the Galactic Empire did here.
When you're reviewing an application, do you often make, for example, home visits or maybe even interviewing?
We certainly try whenever that is possible. It was very difficult in this case because the petitioner was on the move so much.
And why would that pose as a problem?
Well, you know, we really, I mentioned the stability. We have found that children do best when there is a consistent home for them. That's certainly something that we'd like to make available to them if possible. So that's a concern. You know, I won't say that that's sort of the only issue, but that is one thing that we keep in mind.
Were you ultimately able to make a home visit?
After much difficulty, we were kind of given a number of excuses. We heard that the home had been sort of dismantled, I believe, by Jawas. That created some deep concern on our part, but we've all dealt with Jawas, so I understand that he did have the ship ultimately repaired, and we were able to at least take a quick visit, yes.
And what would you find? What did you find in your assessment of the home?
It was a little different from many homes that we see for children. I didn't see a lot of child-proof locks, child doors. I didn't see a lot of the child-proofing, puffy barriers that we like to see. Didn't really see. I don't think I saw a diaper disposal or a bath or anything like that. Not a lot of toys or plush toys. There seemed to be a lot of dangerous things that were available to be played with. At first, I wasn't sure if that was real or if that was maybe just something for a child to kind of engage in some fantasy. But I didn't really want to mess with it, so that was a concern for us.
And as part of your assessment with this application, were you able to gather any other information regarding the petitioner?
Well, we've all heard the stories of the soldiers of Mandalore, and their reputation is well known, that they are among the finest and most deadly fighters that the galaxy has ever known. Unfortunately, of course, they have been largely driven underground and driven into hiding. So I certainly don't doubt the reputation of the Mandalorian, Mr. Darjin, who is well known as an effective bounty hunter. So we certainly found that out. But the question for us, the relevant question, is not how effective of a soldier is he, but rather how positive of a parent would he be, a guardian would he be.
I'd like to redirect you to Lucas and his special circumstances. We know he's a special child. Given his special circumstances, what would the ideal living environment be for him?
That is a good question, and one with which we have grappled for a long time. We have looked into some of the archives to see if there have been some parallels, and there's very few, unfortunately. As was mentioned already in this proceeding, perhaps the closest parallel would be the Jedi Master Luke Skywalker, who was a very special child, and thankfully was put in a home with loving people out of the way, where he was able to grow and reach the age of maturity on his own and make his own decisions and then choose his own path. That would really be ideal for us, I think, if we could find a similar situation. We've already seen how bad things can go. I know it was referred to already in this proceeding, but I think it was maybe 30 or 40 years ago, maybe even longer than that. The archives are a little unclear and there are some gaps, but the Jedi Council was faced with this same decision when they had to make a decision regarding a very talented young boy at the time, and they had to decide what would be done there. I think we are certainly at that level in terms of the ability, the talent of this child. With regard to the ideal situation, we don't even know the species of the child, unfortunately. It's not really been confirmed. If Master Yoda were still available, I think he could make an ideal parent. Unfortunately, I think he's gone. There was a former member of the Jedi Council, I believe Master Yaddle, during the pre-Clone Wars years, but she also has been lost to the sands of time. So if we could find another member of that species, that would help a lot, because we really don't know a lot about this species. Certainly when I heard that the child was 50 years old, I figured that meant the child would not be a child. We don't even know how long the child will live. I believe Master Yoda was over 800 years old. We'd like, ideally, to have one guardian who could stay with the child all the way through to the age of majority. So that the less change, the less disruption, the better. But we don't know the specific needs of this species. So I think that the best analog, the closest analog we could find, would be someone who has similar powers, a force-sensitive, force-powerful person.
And for a child who is force-sensitive, and given your capacity as an officer of Department of Health Services, do you think a child like that would benefit from living in a stable environment as opposed to moving around so much?
I think that that's sort of the best we could do if we could not find another Force-sensitive, Force-sensitive being. You know, I'm sort of back to what we're saying in terms of trying to put the galaxy back together. We are doing the best we can with what we have, and I think that, you know, we want to do right by this child, and that would mean finding a home, with a stable home with parents or guardians that would look after the child and give the child a chance to grow. You know, hopefully something like Master Skywalker had.
And we are aware that there are some special considerations given the nature of Lucas. In your capacity as an officer, do you think it is possible for him to stay secure in one location?
You know, it's always hard to predict what will happen. You know, we the Republic, are trying to stomp out the last remnants of the Empire. But we may be engaged in this mop-up operation for a long time. I would certainly say yes. You know, if we took the example of Master Skywalker to its sort of logical conclusion, he did have a guardian nearby who watched over him until he came of age of majority. That was Master Kenobi. Perhaps we could have some sort of guard, you know, some sort of person in the shadows watching after him. Maybe that would be a possibility here.
What is your understanding of Mr. Jarn's job as a bounty hunter?
Well, we understand that he engages in some very exciting adventures that can often lead to putting him in harm's way. And unfortunately, my review of the record showed that the child has already been put in harm's way several times, and in fact was kidnapped by stormtroopers. So it's already happened, and we certainly want to prevent that from happening again.
Based off of your understanding of Mr. Jarn, do you think he is a good soldier, given his capacity?
You know, thankfully we don't have the same need for soldiers now, but I would say absolutely, we on the Republic would have been very happy to have him on our side during the war.
And kind of as a final question, given your role in Department of Children's Services and your position as the one who is making this assessment, your qualifications, do you think Mr. Jarn would be able to be that fit guardian for him?
I think that would be very difficult. I think that we could try to do better.
Thank you. No further questions.
If the court may interject a question, the court is aware from the moving papers that Mondo has been able to secure a floating bulletproof stroller for the child in this case. Does that allay any of your concerns?
Well, that's an interesting question, Your Honor. We have not encountered a stroller that would be fully blaster-proof before. It helps, but just because it's blaster-proof, you know, how protective would it be? You know, you could maybe deflect a DL-44 blast tech, but I'm not sure it would deflect an E-Web repeating blaster. And if we get even further, would it protect it from a thermal detonator? I mean, we really have to be careful. You know, we're talking about escalation here. So it helps, but can we do better? Yes, I think we can.
All right, I apologize, counsel. When you're ready, class.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon, Mr. Dunn.
Good afternoon.
So I'd like to start with a bit of history first. So to your knowledge, you're aware that in the Clone Wars, the Old Republic had clone cadets that fought along those stormtroopers, right?
Correct.
And also during the High Republic, the Jedi Order raised younglings who were also Force-sensitive.
Correct.
And the Empire actually hunted children who were Force-sensitive with the Inquisitors, didn't they?
Correct.
And you're aware that the Mandalorian Creed has endured for centuries the raising of foundlings within the Mandalore culture, right?
Yes.
Now I'd like to talk a little bit about your capacity as a child services worker. Now, you would agree with me in saying that it's important to respect one's religious creed.
Absolutely. We, the Republic, want to bring that respect back to the galaxy.
And you're aware that the Mandalorian is actually adhering to that religious creed by taking in Lucas.
I'm aware that is what he believes.
Right, and you're aware that not only that's not just what he believes, but that is actually a part of his creed as a Mandalorian.
I don't disagree with that part, but the part I would disagree with is that I'm not sure he gets to make that ultimate decision when it's a child of a different species like this.
But you're aware that foundling or, you know, such. So it's someone that is orphaned, and usually a part of the Mandalore culture is to take in that foundling and raise that foundling as its own until it becomes of age or until it's reunited with someone that seasons, right?
I'm aware of that, yes.
Now, you spoke a little bit on your direct examination that you weren't really able to do much research that is required in the protocol in your role as a child services worker, right?
Not exactly. I said that we often are not able to do that, meet all those steps, given the sheer volume of applications we receive. However, this is a very, very special case. So this is one where we did put in some additional resources to ensure that we did follow all those steps.
But you really weren't able to do a lot of reporting, such as sitting down and meeting with Mandalorian and discussing the concerns, right?
He was traveling far too much for us to be able to do that. It was really hard to do that.
And you mentioned that you were only able to visit the home very briefly.
Yeah, it was when he came, I think, and was bringing the child here for in advance of the custody hearing.
But, Mr. Dine, you didn't actually document any of that, did you?
I did write some notes. We haven't had much time to turn that around, though.
But you didn't actually bring any documents to present to the court today exactly when this visit happened, what it was you observed, and what your recommendations were?
My recommendations are in my declaration. The details of the visit, I haven't had time to document that, though.
And you said something very interesting on your direct examination, and I wrote it down because I wanted to make sure I had it right. You said that child protective services must be sensitive to the cultural needs of a particular child. Now, that means that not every child is going to have the same living atmosphere as another, right?
Correct.
So it's important to be sensitive to specific needs of that child.
Correct.
And as I said earlier, Lucas is a child that was an orphan, right?
Well, we don't know if he is in fact an orphan. All we know is that we have not been able to locate his parents. We don't really know a lot about the species, how they reproduce or whatnot. So it's difficult to answer the questions in the way that you're posing them.
Well, I'm simply saying that the needs of Lucas can't be actually compared to the needs of another child because there just isn't enough information.
I would agree that we don't know enough about the species to say exactly what he needs. I don't think anyone can really say that.
Now, you would agree with me in saying that there is no such thing as a perfect parent, right?
I think that depends on who you ask. I think if you ask children, they would definitely agree. If you ask parents, they would hopefully disagree.
Well, it could be subjective, but there isn't a workbook or a manual to follow in order to say that this is what a perfect parent should do given all of these circumstances, right?
I think I have seen some Star Wars handbooks about how to raise Jedi and train them.
Well, if you have any, you'd like to submit them to evidence before the close of the trial.
I don't have it on. I think the author was Beatty, was his name? Yeah, something like that.
Now, I'd like to move on and talk about, now you were here for the testimony when Mandalorian took the stand, right? You were present to hear that?
Yeah, I know, I really wasn't supposed to be. There's a witness exclusion rule typically, but again, we don't have a lot of space here, so yes.
So okay.
I tried to plug my ears, yeah.
So I'd like to talk about some of those things. So you would agree with me in saying that the Mandalorian did a lot of things to actually protect Lucas.
Yes, we do not question the intentions of the Mandalorian. I think he certainly cares about the child, and we don't question any of that. He's done a good job, thus far, doing his best to protect the child.
Well, I'd like to talk about some of those things. So when IG-11 wanted to kill Lucas, it was the Mandalorian who saved him.
Yes.
And when Lucas was being subjected to the medical experiments by the Imperial Remnant, it was the Mandalorian again that saved him.
Yes.
And when the Mandalorian actually found sanctuary for Lucas and Sargon, it was the Mandalorian again that saved him when he was going to be attacked, right?
He's a great bodyguard.
So through all of these instances where the Mandalorian was there for Lucas, protecting him, it is still your opinion that he is not fit to be a parent for Lucas.
I would say, as I mentioned earlier, he's a great bodyguard, but as a parent, I think we can and should try to do better by the child.
But as you said on direct examination, you don't even have anyone in mind right now who would be a better guardian than the Mandalorian, right?
There are some possibilities. We have tried to reach out to Master Skywalker, but I understand he's disappeared, so we're waiting for a response.
Well, just to make my question a lot clearer, Mr. Dine, right now, as you sit in that witness stand, there is not a person that you have assigned to take over custody duties for Lucas.
Not until we get a decision from the court, no.
Thank you. No further questions.
All right, any redirect?
No, Your Honor, as counsel for Department of Children's Services, we do respectfully request that Mr. Jarin please sheath his blaster until the termination of proceedings.
All right, Mr. Jarin, we can't have weapons in the courtroom. Can you please hand that to the bailiff? Thank you. I will not tolerate any further weapons in this court. All right, any further witnesses on behalf of the DCFS?
None, Your Honor.
All right, does DCFS rest?
Yes.
Does the petitioner rest?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, argument on behalf of the petitioner?
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, the witness may be excused.
I really have a seat.
You can stand over there.
Can you proceed?
Of course.
May it please the court, Your Honor, opposing counsel, this is the way. When it comes to parenting, it can be so easy to criticize. It can be so easy to point your finger and say, you're doing a terrible job. But the truth is, there is no perfect parent. Because we don't live in a perfect world. And the safety and the well-being of a child can only be guaranteed when they are placed with a guardian who will do everything in their power to ensure it. The events that led up to today's trial, questioning the Mandalorian and his fitness as a guardian for Lucas, those were unfortunate events. And we sympathize with the outcome of those tragedies. However, this is a case that is built upon the idea of on whom can we place the blame. And as you have seen for yourselves throughout the duration of this trial, the answer to that question is clear. The Mandalorian should not be blamed. Because this is the way. This statement is more than just a mantra. It's a revelation of a way of life. A way of life in which my client, the Mandalorian, has become one with. Now, bear in mind that we have the burden as the petitioners of showing by clear and convincing evidence that the Mandalorian has the best interest for Lucas, pursuant to California Penal Code 1514. Keep in mind that the best interest does not mean perfect parenting. But you must consider all the facts and all the evidence, given all the circumstances that you have heard today. Now let's revisit some testimony. You all heard when the Mandalorian took the stand. He told you how he grew up as an orphan when his parents were murdered by the battle droid. He told you how he sympathized with Lucas. He created a bond with him because he too was also an orphan with no family to be found. He told you how his religious creed to protect a foundling who is a child who has been orphaned is a part of the Mandalorian culture. He has a duty to act as Lucas's father, and he embraced that duty. You heard how he rescued Lucas on many occasions. You even heard the Child Protective Services worker admit to all these things. How it was the Mandalorian that saved Lucas when IG-11 wanted to kill him. How it was the Mandalorian who actually saved his, who actually saved Lucas's life when medical experiments were being performed on him by the Imperial Remnant. You heard how it was the Mandalorian who saved Lucas when they were in Sanctuary in Sargon, and he had a bounty on him. Mandalorian also told you that the safest place in the galaxy is with him. So why would we want to assign Lucas to someone else? You heard for yourselves that Child Protective Services they don't really have anyone definite in mind for Lucas to go to. Talked a lot about how they would try to get someone, you know, similar to what Anakin Skywalker had. Well, that's just not the case. Because we know that Lucas is a very special child. He has special talents. And he has already established a bond with the Mandalorian. Now, Your Honor, on behalf of the Mandalorian, we are confident that we have shown by clear and convincing evidence that the Mandalorian is the best fit for Lucas. We are confident that he will thrive in this environment and will continue to grow and continue to keep that bond. Please render a verdict in favor of the Mandalorian, because this is the way, and we have spoken.
All right, does that have any closing arguments?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes. Your Honor, ladies and gentlemen, today a crucial decision must be reached. The road to disaster and ruin is paved with the best of intentions. Today you have heard from the Mandalorian, Din Djarin. It is beyond dispute that Mr. Djarin cares deeply for Lucas. Mr. Djarin has fought and clawed to protect Lucas thus far, and doing so has come at great personal cost to him. But today, this court is called upon to make a tremendously important decision regarding this child's future. In doing so, we must consider the best interests of the child going forward. Indeed, under established law, the court must consider the best interests of the child when deciding whether to appoint a guardian. Today you've heard much from the petitioner about his exploits as a bounty hunter. You've heard from opposing counsel about there not being such a thing as perfect parents. Perfect parents is not the standard, they're correct. But petitioner has not demonstrated that Mr. Djarin is the best parent for Lucas going forward, which is the critical inquiry. It's not whether he has the best interest of the child at heart. It's whether it's in the best interest of the child that he remain the guardian going forward. You have heard from Mr. Djarin regarding the dangerous nature of his profession. Mr. Djarin has, on numerous occasions, been shot at, ambushed, attacked, wounded, and nearly killed in his day-to-day profession. The Mandalorian's way of life is deeply ingrained in his personal identity, and it doesn't seem from his testimony today that he anticipates doing much other than continuing to work as a bounty hunter. Mr. Djarin has done well to protect Lucas thus far, but the concern is not only that Mr. Djarin needs to protect Lucas from the Imperial Remnant, it's that he takes on extremely dangerous jobs that have nothing to do with protecting the child from the Empire. If he continues to work as a bounty hunter, Mr. Djarin will continue to take on jobs. Not all of these jobs are jobs that are required that he take as part of protecting the child. His lifestyle invites danger. You have heard from Mr. Garm Dine, whose job is to assess the suitability of potential guardians. The Razor Crest is not a safe environment for a child. Certainly, Mr. Jaren intends for the child to remain safe, close to him, and near him on the Razor Crest, but that ship appears to be filled to the brim with dangerous weapons, approximately 27.
room.
Including, there are also other dangerous conditions on the Razor Crest, including dangerous furniture, hard floors, sharp corners, etc. Moreover, you have heard from Mr. Dime that the child would fare best in a stable home environment, not one on the move to dangerous planets daily. Again, it is beyond dispute that Mr. Jaren cares for this child. His intentions in this petition are undoubtedly pure. Mr. Jaren is a fantastic soldier and a peerless bounty hunter. However, we are not here to decide whether Mr. Jaren is a good bounty hunter. We are not here to decide merely whether he intends to keep the child safe from the Empire. His exploits aside, we need to look forward. The best interests of the child going forward must be considered. Will Mr. Jaren be able to keep the child safe? Does Mr. Jaren even know if he will survive his next job? Will Mr. Jaren be able to help the child reach his full potential? The child's full potential might be significant, as you've heard. As sorcery of the kind described here today calls to mind stories of wielders of the powerful Force, such as Luke Skywalker, the hero of the rebellion, and Master Yoda. Indeed, you have heard Mr. Garm Dime describe that the child might have been better off with a member of its own species, such as Master Yoda, or a guardian with similar abilities, such as Master Skywalker. The nature of the child's nascent abilities and the potential for growth renders the decision today much more impactful than any ordinary decision we could make. The last time the galaxy was faced with the decision of where and with whom a child with mysterious abilities would live, the result was Darth Vader. It is of vital importance, then, that we consider whether Mr. Jaren is the right kind of guardian, not just for any child, but for a child with such unique force sensitive abilities. The stakes could not be higher. The decision reached today could have galaxy-wide consequences. We should not stop by simply saying Mr. Jaren has good intentions for Lucas. He wants to protect him. He's religiously bound to protect him. Qui-Gon Jinn and Obi-Wan Kenobi certainly had nothing but the best intentions for Anakin Skywalker. And look where that got us. This decision must be taken seriously. Finally, we need only to look toward Mr. Jaren's own words. He, like any of us, would agree that the most crucial inquiry is determining what is best for the child. On Sorgan, Mr. Jaren was presented with an opportunity to abandon his dangerous lifestyle and raise the child in peace. In opting to leave Lucas behind on Sorgan initially, Mr. Jaren showed he understood the importance of a stable life for Lucas. As Mr. Jaren stated, traveling with me, that's no life for a kid. I did my job, he's safe. Better chance at a life. This court should heed Mr. Jaren's words and deny his petition for guardianship. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you to all counsel. This court and indeed DCFS is faced with difficult times. The results of the Clone War and the Galactic Civil Wars have resulted in a number of children who are facing the extraordinary experience of growing up without parents. And the foster system has been tested to the limits of its bounds by being able to find appropriate places for all of these children. And certainly a special child, like in this case, is an extraordinary act to take care of. Being a parent myself, I find it extraordinary that anyone would want a child who may not reach the age of majority and move out for 400 years. That seems like a significant commitment by any person or any parent. This court is also concerned that when he reaches his teenage years, that he has the ability to say, this is not the curfew you are looking for. That being said, the court respectfully disagrees with DCFS. The court finds that the bulletproof stroller that can follow you wherever you go does meet California standards for safety for transporting a child in any type of vehicle. So I don't think the court has that concern. The court is going to find that it's in the best interest of Lucas to be placed with the Mandalorian for the following reasons. One, the court finds that he will have a significant opportunity to expand his horizons through frequent travel and contact with a wide variety of persons with different skill sets. This court further finds that given the fact that many people seem to want this child either dead or for other reasons, that the Mandalorian may be the best parent in order to keep this child safe from otherwise harm. And indeed, as stated earlier, this court is significantly convinced by the fact that this person is now agreeing to parent Lucas for the next 400 years or more. And the court finds that to be a very significant fact in favor of the Mandalorian in this particular case. The court is going to award sole physical and legal guardianship of the child herein called Lucas, or Favreau, if you will, to the Mandalorian. Counsel for the Mandalorian, I'm going to need you to prepare an order after hearing indicating all of the court's findings today.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. We're adjourned.
Mandalorian should have Lucas. All right. How many think that's a dangerous decision? How many remember what happened to Uncle Owen and Aunt Brew? Okay, so again, high risk in the world of Star Wars with being a parent. But at least no one's going to die of sadness. So, so since we have students, why don't you start with Leslie. Everyone introduce yourselves. Where you go to law school?
I'm Leslie Salazar, and I currently go to Southwestern Law School in Los Angeles. In the evening program, of all things.
I'm Brian Mallard. I'm a second-year law student at USD Law, just down the road.
My name's Claudia Salinas, and I am also a second-year law student at California Western School of Law.
My name is Denise Barnes, and I'm in my last semester of law school at Thomas Jefferson School of Law.
So we have a couple minutes, and I like to have us leave the room so there's enough time for the next panel to get set up. So. Any questions?
Does the court order the return of the Mandalorian's weapon?
No, the court's going to confiscate the weapon.
Your Honor, your thoughts.
Where am I announcing myself? I thought I'd guide my thoughts. My name is Emily Spear. I am a Superior Court judge in Los Angeles County. I sit in a family court in downtown Los Angeles.
Nice. So, how did the students do?
They did great. I was so impressed. They didn't even freak out when I asked them questions or yelled at this one.
So we have maybe time for like one question, maybe two.
One.
One. Hearing none. Oh yes.
My question is, it was brought up that the child had to save the Mandalorian on a couple of occasions, and I was curious why neither side used that, because I felt like pro-Mandalorian could have said, clearly the child has affinity for the Mandalorian, and anti-Mandalorian could have said, clearly the Mandalorian requires the child's protection.
The court did ponder that it seems like many times Lucas has saved himself rather than the Mandalorian. So his role seems small, comparatively speaking, but I will let the attorneys.
Definitely, yeah, we tried to emphasize a little by just subtly where he tried to be like cradled away and he heard him cry for the first time. We were just hoping that it would kind of tug on the judge's feelings a little bit and try to hint it in there without actually having to emphasize it even more.
Bringing in the baby was a little offsides. Yeah.
So, with that, we do need to vacate, but enjoy the rest of Comic Fest. Sure, thank everyone, Mike and Wendy. Remember the auction of the art, and thank you, Mandalorian.